Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi there, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, an immersion into Uganda. I've been to this country many times, and from the first time I arrived, I soon realized why Winston Churchill called it the Pearl of Africa. And on this trip, I visited the real movers and shakers in Uganda, from the researchers on Lake Victoria, to the veterinarians in the jungle with the gorillas, to the hot DJs on the radio in the capital city of Kampala. And yes, there's even a baseball team where scouts from the major leagues have snapped up some star players. First up, my conversation with the man who's got his fingers on the pulse of Uganda, the morning DJ, Gaetano Kagwa.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Gaetano Kagwa, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Peter. Pleasure to have you here. That was a very, very interesting introduction.
Hey, I do the best I can. But before we even get to Uganda, what the heck were you doing in Wisconsin?
I still ask myself that question every single day, or a lot of the days. I did my undergrad at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. And you mentioned it in your intro. It's my first winter there went down in the record books as one of the coldest that they'd ever had. Here I was from Uganda going to this place to go to university. And the only reason I went to that university is that my father had a business, a partner, at the time we were living in Lesotho, who was from the United States. And I think he was an alumni who had some kind of association with the University of Wisconsin.
So you knew a guy who knew a guy?
I knew a guy who knew a guy. Exactly, that guy. So when my brother went to school there, my father was then like, why must I struggle getting you another place in a different school? You just follow your brother. He's there. He'll look after you. It'll be easier to get into the school without doing your SATs. And boom, that's how I ended up there.
Of course, my SATs were so depressing. I have no idea how I got into any school, but that's a whole other story. But then you came home.
Yes. Yeah, so I was in America from 1993, 94, roughly, up until about 1999. You know, so this was before the turn of the century, so to speak. But after graduating, I spent like, what, a year or two just kind of wafting around, working, saving a bit of money. But the calling to come back home was too great. You know, I had to come in. You know the old adage, east or west, home is best. And that's why I came back.
For those people who don't know, and by the way, most Americans, I'm afraid to say, are geographically ignorant. There are 54 countries in Africa, Uganda being one of them. What makes Uganda so special?
What doesn't make Uganda so special? I mean, we have the best climate in Africa.
Well, you're right on the equator.
We're on the equator. That's another advantage. We have the, of course I'm going to be biased. We have the best food in the world. We've got the best fruit in the world. We are known as the Pearl of Africa. In fact, all African countries have some kind of nickname. Sudan is the heart of Africa. Lesotho is the kingdom in the sky. They've all got these different, ours is the Pearl of Africa.
But that didn't come from you guys. That came from Winston Churchill.
That came from Winston Churchill. Be that as it may, we are the Pearl of Africa. You know, we're that gem that is, and excuse the pun, a hidden gem.
I'll take that. But, you know, it's interesting. Most people, when you say the word Nile River, only think Egypt. The Nile starts here.
The Nile starts in Uganda. We are the source of the Nile. In fact, because of course of international agreements and the likes, you know, Egypt and all countries have to have access to the Nile. But if we decided to be real, you know, hard asses, and we decided to switch off the Nile, then what? But of course, we can't do that.
Listen, when the world wars happen after this, it won't be over oil. It will not be over politics. It will not be over religion. It'll be over water.
You make a very good point, because natural resources are the most required resource of all.
And by the way, if you take a look at a map, the thing that astounds me about the Nile, not how long it is or how many countries it goes through, it flows north.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's a misconception many people feel. They feel almost as if it should flow from the north down south, but it's the other way around. And of course, like you touched on, it goes through so many countries which use the Nile for so many things. So it's one of, if I'm not mistaken, it's the longest river in the world.
It's, I think, the second longest. It might be the Amazon. I'll find that out.
Okay.
But either way, we're talking power. We're talking history. We're talking economy, because without the river, there's no economy. Without the river, there's no food. Without the, it's just, you can actually just look out and see it and know right away.
Yes, yes, absolutely. The Nile has so many advantages of being on the Nile, of having access to the Nile, moving goods for source of water, for so many things. And without it, I don't think Africa would be any way, shape, or form the way it is right now. And actually, going back to what we said earlier on, it's the longest river in Africa, not the world.
There you go. See, I knew I was right. See? But it's my show. I can be right.
Yes, you can. You can.
But wait, let's talk about your show. You start every day at 6 a.m. You're drive time DJ.
So, yeah, I do the breakfast show. It's called Gaetano and Lucky in the Morning. It starts at 6 o'clock in the morning for 4 hours. So we get off air at 10 o'clock in the morning, which means I get up at about 4:30 in the morning. I'm in studio by 5:40 a.m., still half asleep. And then ours is about waking people up, lots of laughter, lots of energy, a little bit of politics, but basically it's a good-natured show.
And bottom line, you talk about energy. 8 years ago when I was here, I didn't feel the energy. Today I feel the energy in Kampala.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kampala, Uganda, just generally speaking, we're going through so much. You know, as we know, the world downturn, the economy coming back from, of course, COVID-19 the last 2 years. I mean, there's a lot of hope. Having said that, you know, people are still struggling. People are still trying to make ends meet. And I think that's everywhere around the world. It doesn't matter where you are. But the spirit of Ugandans, the spirit of being in Uganda, in Kampala, you'll see it everywhere. From the smiles that you see, from the generosity that you see around you.
You know, I have to stop you there. There's an old line from Groucho Marx that said, I would never join a club that would have me as a member. And so here I am in Uganda, and everybody's so nice to me. I'm like going, they must be talking about somebody else. It can't be me. And it turns out it has nothing to do with me. It's who the Ugandans are.
And this is something we're very proud of. They talk about, I think, is it Finland or Sweden? One of those Nordic countries being the happiest in the world.
Finland.
It's Finland. Yeah. The happiest people. But, you know, we beg to differ. We beg to differ. I don't think they've come here to do the research properly. We are happy people despite what happens. And we share it with the visitors who come to visit our country.
And by the way, speaking of that, you've got Lake Victoria, which is amazing, right? You've got the Nile. You got Whitewater Rapids. By the way, we're talking class six. I mean, if you really want to kill yourself, you can come here and do that. I went down the rapids, but we did a class four, and that was crazy enough.
I've actually been on those Ginger Rapids myself.
That's exactly where we were, yeah.
Yes, yes. And you were lucky you didn't do the class six, because I did the class six. And to this day, I was thinking, what the hell was I thinking? But yeah, we've got such beautiful nature around that we can actually use for sports. And I'm glad you did. The next time you come back, because you've come back, you came, like you said, 9 years ago. You've come again this time. The next time you come, class six.
That will be the last time I come. Hey, listen, part of being smart is knowing what you're stupid at. Honestly. But, you know, it's interesting because we also, you know, we've done this show many times from Rwanda. We did a very special tour with the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame. We went gorilla trekking up there in the Volcanoes National Park. But here, you've got gorillas as well. And you've got them in a location which has the best sounding name ever because it sounds like Indiana Jones. It's the Bwindi Impenetrable Forest.
There you go. And I like how you made the connotation to Indiana Jones. I mean, it is impenetrable. The name actually says it itself. And yes, you went to Rwanda, you saw the gorillas there. But did you know, and I'm sure maybe you were told, or maybe you weren't, that the gorillas of Rwanda come from Uganda?
Sounds like a bad song. And you've got more of them here.
We've got a lot more of them here. Perhaps maybe in terms of our marketing and tourism strategy, we haven't been selling them more and the way we really should, selling the country, because they are a big money maker, they're a big attraction. But, you know, we have a lot more gorillas. We have a much wider range in which you can actually see them in Bwindi Impenetrable Forest. So, you know, it's just one of those things that hopefully, we'll get right as far as tourism is concerned.
And by the way, there's a reason why they call it the Impenetrable Forest, because when you get down into it where the gorillas are, you're not going very far.
This is very true. That forest is very dense. I actually have not gone. I've been to Rwanda to see the gorillas there, funny enough. I've never had a chance, and you didn't invite me. So maybe next time you come again, I'd have gone there by the time you get back.
We've been talking to Gaetano Kagwa, who not only has a radio show, but he was also my guide through a crazy place in town that I recommend everybody goes. And nobody ever does this when they come to a town. You want to go to the local markets, not the malls, not the branded merchandise. You want to go where the locals hang out, where they sell everything from eggs to chickens to you know what, or you don't know what. And that's where you find out everywhere you want to go because people will tell you.
That's Nakasero Market. That is a beautiful market. It was a real pleasure taking you around. And I think I mentioned this to you. So the market was founded back in the 1800s. But when they moved it to that particular position in Nakasero Market in 1927. And you are right to say that we're almost a century old at that location.
You are. And of course, when I say they sell everything there, they do.
They do. I mean, you go down over there, and I think like in most parts around Africa, it's an open market. And you can get anything, like you said, from eggs to chicken, live chickens. Not these chickens that you find wrapped up in a polythene bag and ready to eat. No. These are the live ones. So you go, you pick the ones that you want, and you take them live, and you slit their throats, and you take off the feathers, and you cook them, you know? Now, of course, something like that in America, because of food... critic, I don't know what they call them, but the health industry, you're not allowed to do that.
Well, to be honest, Gaetano, I'm not slitting any chicken's throats. Sorry. But it's still part of the atmosphere of the market is to see that.
It really is, because when you walk through it, you smell all the different flavors of the market. You see the different colors of the market, the greens, the tomatoes, the pumpkins, the watermelons.
And by the way, may I just say, and I'm not saying this because I'm in Uganda, I'm telling this, I've had pineapple all over the world, right? I've had it in the Philippines, which was great. I've had it in Hawaii, which is also great. Philippines is better, but nothing like the pineapples in Uganda.
Please say that again with emphasis.
No, I'm only going to say it once. No, but I'm telling you, I was blown away.
Yeah. No, we have some of the best fruit in the world, the best foods in the world. And every single time you go to the market, you get to taste what Uganda is all about. You throw anything in the ground, our soil is so rich that you can literally throw anything in the ground and within days, you will have a garden of food.
And I'm telling you, I still go back to the pineapple. I can't get enough. Now, when you took me around the market, we didn't get pineapple. We didn't get watermelon. We threw a few around, but we didn't get any. You took me somewhere else.
Yes. I wanted you to taste a particular delicacy. One thing you did do and accompanied a bit later on, but I had you taste nsenene.
And that is?
Grasshoppers.
I'm making a face even now. Yes, I did taste them.
Grasshoppers are a, what's that word? A delicacy. And they're seasonal, all right?
Oh, I'll only eat seasonal grasshoppers. I hate grasshoppers out of season.
Yeah, they have to be in season. So you get them and you have people in different parts, particular part of Uganda who will go and harvest them, catch them because they come with the rains. And then you pluck off the wings and you pluck off other little parts about them, fry them up with a bit of onions and salt and a little bit of oil and all of that, season them a little bit, and then they are crunchy. And you mentioned they look like shrimp.
They look like little baby shrimp, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they're very crunchy. You know, you add a little bit of salt or pepper if you want to have a little.
Look, if you don't add enough cooking oil, butter, salt, garlic, and fry it, cardboard's going to taste great.
So next time you're going to come and eat some cardboard.
And you can call it a grasshopper. I won't know the difference.
I won't know the difference.
But then you did something else with me. You made me Rolex. Now, I mean, I'm not stupid, but I couldn't understand. It wasn't about a watch, was it?
So there's the Rolex that you wear on your watch, and then there is the Rolex that you put in your stomach. Now, it's not Rolex per se. It's Rolex. But when you say it fast, it sounds like Rolex. And it, you know, that's how they actually even spell it, like the Rolex. Right. And it's basically a chapati.
Right. Now, what's a chapati?
A chapati is...
Is it like a tortilla or
kind of like a tortilla, a bit softer. And you know, once you make the chapati, you get the egg and you make an omelet. You basically make an omelet and then you roll the omelet into the chapati and that becomes the Rolex. But of course, it has been remixed, it has been recalibrized, and you can throw in meat and chicken and whatnot and then roll it into the chapati.
So it's a wrap.
It's a wrap, but you know, a wrap is just so, ugh. This is a Rolex, my friend. A Rolex, and the biggest Rolex ever made in Uganda, by the way, breaking the Guinness Book of Records. Again, I mentioned this to you, using over 1,200 eggs.
That's a big wrap. I must say, I did. You had me make one, and I did it.
I saw you attempt to make one. You ate your own product, which I'm still recovering from. But I want to say thank you very much for indulging us with your cooking skills.
My thanks to Gaetano. Lake Victoria is a magical place, and I piloted a boat out to a remote destination out on that lake, known as Chimpanzee Island. And there, I sat down with Dr. Laura Lewis from UC Berkeley's Department of Psychology. What's a psychologist doing there? Looking for common ground and explanations for the similarities in chimp and human behavior.
You know, it's one thing to go to Kampala, it's one thing to go to Entebbe, and then you get out on Entebbe on Lake Victoria, and you find yourself on this amazing island that's basically a sanctuary for chimpanzees, and the island is called?
Ngamba Island Chimpanzee Sanctuary.
And that's Dr. Laura Lewis from the UC Berkeley, who's here doing her research. But your research here is fascinating because it's an island with nothing but chimpanzees, right?
That's right.
And you.
Yeah, that's right.
And what are you studying?
Yes, so we're studying their social psychology. We're really interested in how they process social relationships, like friendships, how they build trust with each other, whether they get angry at their friends. So we're studying these types of things, whether they're curious about others, whether they're interested in gossip, just like we humans are.
And your preliminary findings are?
It seems like, yes, they are very socially curious and that they do seem to get angry at their friends. Now, we won't know until we're able to analyze the data, but there's some very interesting behavior that we're seeing here.
Now, any of the chimpanzees read People magazine or do they watch Entertainment Tonight?
You know, they're really interested in watching each other, listening to each other, understanding what's going on. There's such complex behaviors like fights between friends, changes in the dominance hierarchy, and they're really attuned to these processes. These social interactions and relationships are just as important as they are to us humans.
In studying these these dynamics, right, what surprises?
I think what's so fascinating is how long-lasting these relationships are. You know, as humans, we have friendships that last decades.
But do they mate for life?
Same with chimpanzees. They have friendships that last decades. They live up to their 50s, sometimes 60s in the wild, and their relationships carry them through their entire lifetime.
But of course, there's a pecking order.
That's absolutely right. Yes, there's a strict dominance hierarchy. In chimpanzees, the males are dominant, the females are more subordinate, and everyone kind of slots in, but sometimes they change. So this dominance hierarchy is complex, varied, and very dynamic also.
In studying them, I mean, what comparisons do you make between their behaviors, let's say, of children?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're just starting, actually, to understand exactly how chimpanzees develop, and especially their social psychology, how it develops. We need to do a lot of more work here. And these sanctuaries, Ngamba Island Sanctuary, is such an incredibly important place for us to do this work, to understand how these capacities might develop.
Because you have a working, living laboratory.
That's absolutely right. And most importantly, these animals are rescued from the wild. They've been orphaned. They've faced traumatic early life experiences. And now they're able to live here on the island in a lush forest with plenty of food, where caretakers that take care of them and make sure they have important, you know, well-being. So I think it's really important for all of us to understand it's so important to conserve these species. They're incredibly endangered.
When you say they're rescued, I saw something that were rescued from Burundi, from South Sudan. They're not just being rescued from Uganda.
That's right. All across Africa, these chimpanzees are being rescued. They're being orphaned, and they're losing their forests at increasing rates. So it's important to conserve them.
And the cool thing is that if you can find the boat, you can get out here and anybody can come visit.
That's right. Anyone can come visit. It's just a quick 45-minute boat ride from Entebbe. I highly encourage everyone to come check out these wonderful chimpanzees in this beautiful island environment.
Now, you'll be going back to Berkeley when you finish the research. What are you going to take back with you?
That's right. Oh, I'm going to take back so much. First of all, just how incredibly beautiful and rich and complicated the chimpanzees' social lives are. But also how amazing these Ugandan caretakers are. They spend their lives caring for these animals and making sure they have, you know, healthy, beautiful lives here. So I think for me, that's what I'm taking back.
And of course, how many of your friends think you're nuts that you're here?
Yeah, a lot of them can't. Sometimes I send pictures of the bugs and they can't believe it. But
well, can we talk about the lake flies?
Yeah, oh my gosh, so many lake flies.
I mean, when you're coming across Lake Victoria and you see what looks to be like a cloud, that is not a cloud, is it?
Right, that's not a cloud. It's a swarm of lake flies and you can hear them even, right? There's a high humming pitch in the air, but we've gotten used to them mostly now. Sometimes not in our coffee, but... that's okay.
But the good news is they're not going to hurt you.
No, completely harmless. So that's fine. And there's actually not too many mosquitoes here, which I've been surprised about. It's quite nice.
What did you know about Uganda before you came here?
I honestly didn't know a whole lot. I knew some of the history, the colonial history. I knew that it had such rich wildlife, has some of the highest bird species in the world. But I didn't know a lot of other details. So it's been wonderful to learn not only about the chimpanzees that live here, the people that live here as well, and the rich culture and history of this country.
I mean, the minute you walk on this island, you're surrounded by the weavers, those birds, with 100 nests in just one tree.
Absolutely, yeah. They're social, really interesting birds. And there are, I think it's, you know, Uganda has the highest number of bird species in any country in the world.
So if you're a birder, this is the orgasm.
That's right. This is the place to be. Absolutely. Yeah. And even on this island, you can see over 100 bird species in a single day.
And it's not that big an island.
And Innocent, who you've talked to, has seen over 200 different bird species just on this tiny island alone. So it's just rich with incredible ecosystems, rich with life here.
And when you get back home, what are you going to tell your friends?
Oh, good question. I'll tell them about baby Silver, who you just met, the six-month-old baby Silver, who's just learning how to walk and climb. I'll tell them about the wonderful Ugandan caretakers here that I've worked with. And of course, I'll tell them all about the chimpanzees.
My thanks to Dr. Lewis. Then it was a much longer journey to go deep in the jungle in search of mountain gorillas. But I had a great guide, Dr. Gladys Kalema-Zukuoska, the pioneering veterinarian who knows this land and its inhabitants probably better than anyone.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Her name is Dr. Gladys Kalema-Zukuoska. She is, let's put it this way, she's a United Nations champion of the planet. She's a Sierra Club winner. She's a National Geographic explorer and the first veterinarian for African animals in Uganda. And a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, when we go trekking for mountain gorillas, I've had a chance to do it in Rwanda. We've talked about that before. Uganda's a different experience. And, you know, the trek that we did today was not just to be tourist and to see the animals, but to learn about the ecosystem, to learn about this fragile group of animals that's still considered critically endangered in so many parts of the world where they exist. And they don't exist in that many parts of the world. There's Rwanda, there's the Congo, and there's Uganda, right?
Yes, there is. Yep. The mountain gorillas are only found in Uganda, Rwanda, and Democratic Republic of Congo.
And a couple of years ago, their numbers were decreasing rapidly, but thanks to the efforts of my guest right here, Dr. Gladys, those numbers have increased dramatically, and there's hope. But most importantly, it's not just keeping a species alive, but learning from that species and telling us what we need to know, not just about them, but about us.
Yes, we are so closely related. We share 98.4% genetic material and can easily make each other sick, but we can also learn a lot from each other because we're so similar.
You know, one of the things that you must do, one of the protocols when you go out there into the forest, is you must wear a mask, simply because we could easily communicate a disease to them and vice versa. So it wasn't just a COVID protocol, it's what you need to do. But then once we're there, it was so amazing to see them in their natural habitat, and to see them and to see their behaviors, which so often mimic our own.
Yep, their behaviors are so similar to us. The babies love to play. The juveniles are like, you know, teasing them, beating up on them, playing with them. It's so amazing. It's beautiful. And they love to show off in front of everyone.
Which they did, of course, when we did it. But when you first came back here in the mid-90s, it was a different environment altogether, wasn't it?
It was. In the mid-90s, there were only two habituated gorilla groups. Gorilla tourism had just begun in 1993. And there was a huge air of hope because it was one of the poorest places in, not only in Uganda, but in the whole world. And people just didn't have any other livelihood other than picking tea. So gorilla tourism changed people's lives. And so many, 90% of the park staff are from the local community.
You know, you did a great book called Walking with Gorillas, which I'm happy to have. But also there's a chapter of that book saying, is gorilla tourism a necessary evil? And what's the downside of that?
I would say it's a tough one. It's a very delicate balance between providing an economic incentive for the gorillas being around and at the same time making sure that we don't make them sick. But because they're so closely related to us, they're so similar to us, they're so charismatic, people want to see them. The money that they bring prevents people entering the forest to poach and collect firewood and to destroy the forest, cut down the trees, because they realize, you know, that the gorillas are so important and they're earning a living from the gorillas. But at the same time, the people who come to visit them can easily make them sick, such as COVID-19 or common flu or all kinds of diseases that you pick up when you travel. So we always have to strike a very delicate balance. And that's why it's only 8 people allowed to visit each gorilla group per day and only for 1 hour, just to make sure that the gorillas have enough time on their own and they're not exposed to so much human disease, human interference, which could result in them getting sick.
We're talking with Dr. Gladys Kalima Zukusoka. You know, in your book, you talked about the very first time you came here and your ranger that was taking you out was actually a former poacher.
Yes. He took me out and he was a former poacher. It was pretty amazing. I was excited that he had stopped poaching. And actually, we used to call them born again poachers during that time because they were earning more money protecting the wildlife rather than killing the wildlife. And that made me get so interested in conservation, and I wanted to become a full-time wildlife veterinarian.
And you did. But it's also changed the economic base of these communities because, first of all, you had to convince the community that these animals are worth more alive than dead, number one. And then you had to figure out a way to compensate them in a way that it had a real meaning on their lives and you could sustain it.
Yep, we had to really let them know that the gorillas are their future, and if they protect them, they can benefit a lot from them. And we all needed to join hands to make it possible. And the gorillas have transformed their lives. I mean, Bwindi was one of the poorest places in the world, but now it's one of the most lucrative places in Uganda because of the mountain gorillas.
By the way, tell everybody what Bwindi stands for.
Bwindi in the local language means place of darkness, because it's really thick when you're hiking through it. And the local people used to call it place of darkness because it's quite dark inside.
Talk about our hike.
Our hike was pretty steep. That's another reason it's impenetrable, because it can be steep in some places. It was quite a steep hike, but we basically hiked outside the forest and we got inside just a little bit at the end. The gorillas were right at the edge of the forest and very close to community land. But now there's a whole buffer zone of tea to prevent gorillas coming out. They don't like tea, but where there's no buffer zone of tea, they can easily meet plantations. People have banana plants in their garden, and gorillas sometimes eat the bananas or the banana plants because they like the moisture in the stem, which really upsets people because it destroys the whole tree. Or they eat the bark of eucalyptus trees because they really like eucalyptus, like so many people and animals, and this really annoys the local community. So today we were able to see all kinds of things. We were able to see how the gorillas and the people are interacting so closely, but their future depends on each other, and we have to make sure that we try and make them coexist. And that's what we're trying to do in our nonprofit conservation through public health.
You mentioned the fact they eat all the bark off the trees. They have a different digestive system than we do. They may be 94.8% close to us, but not when it comes to what they can eat.
Yes, gorillas eat not a regular diet for a human. They eat a lot of leaves, shoots, and stems, and a lot of roughage, very high roughage diets. So the very first time I did a postmortem on a gorilla, necropsy on a gorilla, I was shocked. I thought it was abnormal, but luckily I realized that it wasn't abnormal. I was with a vet who used to work in Rwanda with gorillas, and he said to me, no, it's normal. It looked like the digestive system of a horse. But it was normal because they have a lot. They have to digest a lot of roughage. They have a very large intestine, very large cecum, and I was quite amazed.
And how much do they eat every day?
Oh, they can eat between 10 to 20 kilos a day. A silverback can eat even as much as 20 kilos of leaves, shoots, and stems in a day.
Now, we talk about the economic base. I think it's important for everybody to know that these gorillas are accessible to visitors. It's not inexpensive. It's about $700 to go out there and see them for that 1 hour. And I have to warn you, you will be trekking. You will be walking a lot. In Rwanda, it's much more expensive than that. it's close to $2,000 to $3,000 to have that experience. But here it's about $700. But forgetting how much it costs, what's interesting to me is where the money goes.
Yep, the money really goes to support the running of the park operations, and not only Bwindi Impenetrable National Park, but all the other national parks in Uganda. Uganda has 22 protected areas, 10 national parks, 11 wildlife, 12 wildlife reserves, and not all of them make enough money to meet operational costs because they don't have charismatic species like gorillas or lions. And so some of that money goes to support them, but quite a bit of it also goes to the local communities so that they can coexist and live in harmony with the mountain gorillas, which is very important. And so $10 from every gorilla permit and 20% of the park entry fee goes to the local communities, which makes it about $18 per person. And that makes a huge difference.
Dr. Gladys Kalema Zikusoka, before I let you go, give us your website for your nonprofit.
Our website is www.ctph.org.
Which stands for?
Conservation Through Public Health.org.
And the name of her book, which I highly recommend, with a foreword by Jane Goodall, Walking with Gorillas.
My thanks to Dr. Kalema Zikusoka. And then, a real surprise, a trip outside Kampala for baseball. In Uganda? Yep, they're playing baseball in Uganda. And while some might just call it sandlot, they will even play in the rain until it's just too muddy. These guys are really good. So good that major league teams have already drafted a few of the players. Felix Okuye, the president of the Uganda Baseball and Softball Association, takes it seriously. These are definitely not the Bad News Bears.
Felix, I mean, nobody that I know would associate baseball with Uganda. You guys are soccer fans.
Yeah, well, soccer is beyond Uganda. It's generally in the African continent. We just concluded the African Championship, but Uganda, we baseball.
And they're not kidding. I mean, talk about a field of dreams. They built this field. It's a former potato and banana field that was donated to them. It's all dirt. It can get muddy, but they got the bases, they got the balls, they got the equipment, and they got some really great players. In fact, what nobody realizes is what three of your players just got signed to the LA Dodgers.
Yes. Like I said, Uganda is baseball, and it's working out. We can see now with the results over time that we have managed to have the Dodgers sign three of our players who are featuring in our national teams, and they are doing great. Just recently, a new signing for a catcher, Alan Ajoti, went through. We have Ben Umar, and we have Malay. And also we have a young man who was signed by the Pirates, Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Well, the most interesting thing about this and the most challenging thing about this is you're not a professional team in terms of making money. This is all donation. It's all community-based. When you have games, the only people who come are the locals who can find it. But if you know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, you get to come and watch as well. And you guys were kind enough today to let me do a little batting practice.
Yeah, but you're more than just a gem. That was good.
I hit the ball.
You hit the balls. You hit the balls, and you are giving the pitcher quite a job.
But I'm telling you, what an amazing experience to come all the way to Africa to see baseball being played and played well. And you guys are on your way to the World Cup.
Yes, and just that's, like I said, you are hitting the balls, and that's what makes it baseball a true American pastime sport. Because on a scale of 1 to 2, you'll find any American here knows how to hit the ball, knows how to play baseball. So for us, it is an aspiration, and we are now preparing for the World Cup. And we are supposed to go to South Africa, where we'll be going for the championship. And we are the favorites, I cannot tell you. We are the favorites.
No lack of confidence there. But you start the kids young here now, right? It's 9 years old, 10 years old?
Yeah, we have our local coaches. And these local coaches coach the game in their communities, basically using the Little League model. And these kids, as they keep growing, well, they start even at the age of 7, 8. And next, they get inspired on getting what we'd call local scholarships to go and study in a better school, which has opportunity to also learn more ball. And that's how eventually they have been scouted out and drafted in that baseball school, which is called AVRS. And from there, that is where many of the scouts all over the Major League franchise come and find them. And wow, we are happy that we have Ugandans that have made it. And that's to us a great thing.
And the scouts are actually coming here.
Yes, they always come down here to this ballpark because it's at this ballpark where we normally have organized games which give any scout an opportunity to see these athletes. And well, we are excited and we are happy when we see you come down here and finding your way out down to our ballpark.
I have to say, it wasn't easy.
Yes, and I think you saw our open-air dugouts.
Oh, yeah. Everything's, hey, listen, everything's open-air. If you want to watch the game, bring your own tent.
Yes, you must walk with your tent and at times with an umbrella because it's either it may get too sunny heat or it may shower. And for us here, we don't stop playing until the sun goes down.
So no night games?
No night games. We don't have floodlights. You know, you can't see that. And that would be too, it's too extravagant for us to afford. But we maximize the sun.
And until it rains, you're still playing even in the rain.
Yes, we play until it gets muddy that you can't run in the infield. And there we pause. Our showers are normally like 30 minutes heavy showers, 1 hour heavy showers. The tropic kind of, the tropics kind of weather. And when it's done, the boys are back on the field.
Listen, it's a field of dreams. I'm so happy I could visit with you. Felix Okoye from the Uganda national baseball team. Thanks so much for letting me come out and play.
Thank you, Peter. It was a nice time having you and hitting some balls. The ball practice was quite beautiful.
And don't you forget, I hit the balls.
And well, who knows? You'll be our main team mascot.
That's what's left for me. I knew it.
My thanks to Felix, to Dr. Zukusoka, to Laura Lewis, and to Gaetano Cagua. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, like the baseball scores in Uganda, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Eye on Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Eye on Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Eye on Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.